Welcome back to the Warren County Radio Bible School. Pull that school bell rope a little harder so we can hear that bell. There you go. There's ringing that bell. And so that bell calls us to class, like the old little schoolhouses used to do that were out in the countryside. And some of you may remember hearing the clanking of those old school bells. In this Radio Bible School, we're studying a Sunday school lesson that was written by E.A. Elam for the Sunday schools of January the 20th, 1924. And I'm going to be reading that Sunday school lesson to you from a little Sunday school book that was printed with those lessons, a Sunday school book called Elam's Notes, an old-timey hardbound book that had all the lessons, all the Sunday school lessons in it for a year. And the lesson we're studying at this time is how Moses was called to deliver Israel. In our last class, we read from Exodus chapter 3 of how Moses met with God at the burning bush. And I'll repeat the golden text. It says, by faith Moses, when he was grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to share ill treatment with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. That is Hebrews 11. 24 and 25. And I ask if you would mark in your Bibles and we would read the devotional portion of this lesson when we returned. And now we have returned. And so in just a moment, we're going to read Psalm 130. Now you may want to be turning there in your Bible. And as you do, I'll remind you that the Warren County Radio Bible School is brought to you by the Church of Christ at Rock Cliff. Our meeting house is located between McMinnville and Biola at the foot of Ben Lomond, just across from Mount Zion Road. We have Sunday Bible study at 9 a.m., followed by worship at 10 a.m., Sunday evening worship at 6 p.m., and Wednesday evening Bible study at 7 p.m. All are welcome to all of our assemblies. I am Bill Boyd, the preacher at Rock Cliff, and the superintendent of this Radio Bible School. Now, let's return to our Sunday school lesson. And as part of the devotional reading, we will read from the American Standard Version of 1901, the 130th Psalm. It has an inscription, A Song of Ascents. Out of the depths have I cried unto thee, O Jehovah. Lord, hear my voice. Let thine ears be attentive to the voice of my supplications. If thou, Jehovah, shouldest mark iniquities, O Lord, who could stand? But there is forgiveness with thee, that thou mayest be feared. I wait for Jehovah. My soul doth wait, and in his word do I hope. My soul waiteth for the Lord more than for the watchman wait for the morning, yea, more than watchman for the morning. O Israel, hope in Jehovah, for with Jehovah there is loving kindness, and with him is plenteous redemption, and he will redeem Israel from all his iniquities. That is the 130th Psalm, a psalm of 8 verses. Now let me turn to this Sunday school lesson. And by way of introduction, we read this. Exodus is the second book of the Pentateuch, and therefore of the Old Testament. Exodus means going out or departure. And this book is so named because it gives the account of the departure of the children of Israel from Egypt. Moses wrote the Pentateuch. Jesus, in quoting from this book, ascribes its authorship to Moses in Mark chapter 12 and verse 26, and also in Luke chapter 20 and verse 37. Genesis ends with the death of Joseph, and Exodus begins where Genesis ends, continues the history of the Israelites for 145 years, and closes with the completion and erection of the tabernacle at the foot of Mount Sinai. This book is introduced with the names of the heads of the 12 tribes of Israel, showing who went to Egypt and that they were comparatively few, but that when they departed, they were a great multitude. Let me talk about the time of the Israelites' bondage. And this can sometimes get confusing, but bear with me on this. From the call of Abraham to the giving of the law, which was shortly after the Exodus, was 430 years, according to Galatians 3:17, and Exodus 12:40-41. And from the birth of Isaac, or about the time Israel mocked and cast out with his mother, Genesis 20:10, Galatians 4:19, which was about 30 years after, was 400 years, Genesis 15:13, and Acts 7:6. The children of Israel were not really in Egypt 430 years, but they were strangers and pilgrims so long, dwelling in tents, and even the land of promise had no inheritance, not so much as to set a foot on, Acts 7:5. From the covenant made with Abraham at Haran, when he was 75 years old, Genesis 12:4, to the time when Jacob went down to Egypt, was 215 years. We get this from the ages of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Hence, from the time Jacob went to Egypt to the Exodus was 215 years. So the children of Israel were really in Egypt only that long. Jacob remained in Egypt 17 years, and Joseph survived him 56 years. Hence, the children of Israel were in Egypt about 132 years after the death of Joseph. Another period of interest mentioned in the Bible in this connection is that from the Exodus to the building of the temple in Jerusalem, it was 480 years. 1 Kings 6:1. Now, that was probably hard to follow all of that over the radio, but I think you can see by linking these passages together, we can begin forming a timeline that goes all the way from Abraham and through the Old Testament. After the death of Joseph and his brethren, the Israelites increased in Egypt rapidly in numbers and in power. Exodus 1:7 says they were fruitful, increased abundantly, multiplied, waxed exceeding mighty, and the land was filled with them. God said to Jacob, "Fear not to go down to Egypt, for I will make of thee a great nation." Genesis 46:3, and you may also see Deuteronomy 26:5, and that is what happened to the children of Israel when they came into Egypt. Now, there were efforts to check this increase. Pharaoh thought the rapid increase and progress of the Israelites should be checked, saying, "They are more and mightier than we." He pointed out the dangers to which they subjected themselves in allowing the Israelites to continue as they were. He was afraid that in time of war they should ally themselves with the enemies of Egypt and fight against the Egyptians. And he was afraid that they would depart from Egypt. In order to check this increase and progress of the Israelites, it was determined to set over them taskmasters to afflict them with burdens. The purpose of this was twofold: to get the work done, but also to destroy the Israelites. This affliction was great, as we see repeatedly mentioned in the book of Exodus. But the more the Egyptians made the Israelites to serve with rigor, the more they increased. As in Joseph's case, that which was intended for evil, God overruled for good. The Egyptians did this to keep the Israelites in Egypt, and God's purpose was served to keep them from ever returning. It had been said, too, that this was an industrial and training school for the Israelites. It brought them into the use of mechanical arts of Egypt. It solidified them as a nation and kept them separate from the Egyptians. It made them feel their dependence upon God and to cry for help. It made them long for the promised land as they had never done before. It was hard enough, after all, to wean them from Egypt. The Egyptian bondage represents the bondage of sin. There is no taskmaster so hard and bitter, no tyrant so cruel and abusive, no burden so heavy to bear as one's own passions and sins. A sinner is a veritable slave. When hard work and oppression did not repress the rapid increase of the children of Israel, the cruel Pharaoh issued an edict to the Hebrew midwife to kill all the male children born unto the Hebrew women. But these midwives feared God and did not as the king of Egypt commanded them, but saved the men children alive. They would not commit murder. They did not lie to Pharaoh, but stated the truth when they said, "Because the Hebrew women are not as the Egyptian women, for they are lively." That means they were vigorous, active, and strong, and are delivered ere the midwife come unto them. For this God dealt well with the midwives, and the people multiplied and waxed very mighty. Then, in another way, Pharaoh sought to destroy the male children, and Pharaoh charged all the people, saying, "Every son that is born ye shall cast into the river, and every daughter ye shall save alive." Now Amram and Jochebed were the parents of Miriam, Aaron, and Moses. Aaron was 3 years Moses' senior, according to Exodus 7 and verse 7. And Miriam was several years older than Aaron. Aaron was born probably before this edict of the king was made to destroy all the male children born to the Israelites. The life of Moses is filled with romance, beauty, truth, and sublimity. His character is one of the grandest which shines forth from the pages of Holy Writ. He is in more respects than one the type of Jesus. To become familiar with the Bible statements concerning his life is the best thing both young and old can do in studying history. When he was born, his mother saw that he was a goodly child. Stephen says in Acts 7 and verse 20 that he was exceeding fair, and the margin says fair unto God. And Hebrews 11 and verse 23 says he was a goodly child. He was perfect and well-formed physically, and beautiful, which to his parents was a sign of divine favor. He was nourished 3 months in his father's house, and in some way his parents saved him long from the cruel command of the king. The key to all this is stated in Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 23. By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months by his parents because they saw he was a goodly child, and they were not afraid of the king's commandment. Their faith in God made them not afraid of this commandment. They bent in admiration and love over their newborn child, whose comeliness was a prophecy of his future usefulness, with an assurance born of faith in God that his life would be preserved. In Genesis chapter 15, 13 and 14, we read that God had said unto Abram, "Know of a surety that thy seed shall be sojourners in the land that is not theirs, and shall serve them, and they shall afflict them 400 years, and also that nation whom they shall serve will I judge, and afterward they shall come out with great substance." And this was the little baby that would grow to be that leader that would lead them out of Egypt and fulfill this promise God made unto Abram. This and the promises repeated to Isaac and to Jacob must have been handed down from one to another and cherished especially at this time. They must have counted up the time and found that the 400 years had almost expired, and that they would soon realize this promise, and afterward shall come out with great substance. Now we're going to conclude the class at this point, and we'll pick that up at the next class. In fact, I think what I'm going to do is read Exodus 1 You may be dismissed.